Hello and welcome to Anime Strange to the West. I'm Coley Boyd and here are my friends.
Hello, I'm Zeb Berryman, the Dashing Dishwasher. My pronouns are he and him.
Hi, I'm Lydia Lewis and I have no nickname yet. My pronouns are they, them.
Hi, I'm Liz. Up until a while ago, I was the bodacious barista, but now I'm the bodacious badass. So if there's any inconsistency, it's because we're re-recording at a later date.
Yeah, there's technical difficulties. Meanwhile, I don't need a moniker because I'm just too cool.
Yeah, I'd really like it if things on my computer were working the way I want them to. We are re-recording this, so there will be no predictions or anything of that nature on this episode. Hopefully next episode we will have those again.
Yep.
What anime or manga or other stories or whatnot has everyone been reading or watching or whatever?
I've been reading Chapelwood by Cherry Priest. It's a sequel to this weird... It's basically if Lizzie Borden was a Lovecraftian monster hunter. It's literally Lizzie Borden as a Lovecraftian monster hunter. This time she has to take down a racist branch of Cthulhu worshippers in Alabama in the early 1910s.
I have been playing a game called Scarlet Nexus, which is like a kind of character action type game. It is not an anime because they are making an anime of it. And it is also one of the most ridiculously anime games I've ever played. Everybody is a very stock anime character, and honestly, I really love it. The action is also really fun. And other than like having a somewhat more interesting setting than some of these, the story is, so far at least, kind of what you would expect. But I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'd recommend it.
Is it more or less anime than Yakuza?
Oh, more. So much more.
Amazing.
It's not necessarily as ridiculous, but it is more anime by far.
Okay.
And I haven't been watching anything new, but I have been playing an admittedly 10-year-old game, Warhammer 40K Space Marine. It is fucking awesome.
I started Madoku Magica.
Oh, nice!
I got 4 episodes in. I wanted to watch Magical Girl anime because I feel like that's a gap in my anime experience, because the only Magical Girl anime I've seen before recently was the, was it the 80s or 90s Sailor Moon? The first Sailor Moon series.
Right.
So I looked up a list of the top Magical Girl anime, or Madoku Magica was at the top of the list with no explanation of what it was.
Wait, are you like the only person in the last decade who went into Madoka Magica innocently?
Probably. Also, unrelated side note, my cross stitch that I've been doing of Haku from Spirited Away is finished.
Oh, awesome.
I'll need to wash out the blue marker and iron out the ring wrinkle stuff.
Nice!
So what you're telling me is you're 1,000 times better at cross-stitching than Juliet, is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
I would like to say this about Romeo. The man has love goggles on. He
does.
I think he even brings it up like, oh, I can fix your shirt. Like, I can mend it. And he's like, no.
That's way later in the series, I think.
Oh, okay.
He definitely does have love goggles on, though.
Yeah.
He's just like Juliet is 10 out of 10. 5 stars out of 5. He's like, she's just great. She's great at everything. It's like, dude, she literally set the kitchen on fire trying to make cereal. She's a chef, baby.
She put the kitchen on fire with love.
The kitchen's not on fire. That's just their love. It's fine.
We are getting into discussion of the episodes, so I think we should start discussing the episode.
That's fair.
So, this episode is episode 7. It is called Warp, just for now. As the edgy man arrives to save Juliet, the coach man asks who he is, and he tells him he does not spend his name appeasing the demands of Fool. Fair enough, I guess. He tells her to get up, and then is very cool and takes all the guards out quickly. He spares the last and makes him tell Montague that the bear is already dead. Kirio doesn't get why they're doing this, but Francisco gets it. It's so that they don't send another assassin. The mysterious man says but Juliet has matured well and says her full name. When she demands to know who he is, there's a very cool shot of his dragon steed arriving as he reveals its name, and it's fucking Tybalt.
It's motherfucking Tybalt.
I still can't believe, I mean, I can now because it's been a long time. I mean, it's been twice as long for me than everybody else since I watched this for the first time like a decade ago. But it's still so amazing to me that they made Tybalt the badass anti-hero of this anime.
It's pretty cool, actually. I really like this interpretation of Tybalt. Yeah. Most interpretations of Tybalt are just jackasses, and this one, this interpretation of Tybalt, like,
is hot.
That too. But that wasn't what I was gonna say.
This version of Tybalt fucks.
This Tybalt does fuck.
Yeah, he definitely does.
He does have he fucks energy. I was honestly, I'm kind of disappointed we never see Tybalt and Benvolio interact together because they are in such different spectrums of human being.
Yeah. Tybalt purrs every single line of dialogue that he says. He definitely fucks.
In another anime, he could very successfully be like a sex phone operator.
Yeah.
Any other anime would have that be his profession.
Yeah. Anyways, instead of talking about how hot Tybalt is, I'm going to get back to the recap. Romeo goes out on a ride on Cielo in the dark fog. He thinks about how he was unable to help either Juliet or Benvolio. Cielo does a quick dive and takes him to see some irises. These ones are dry and Ben Shapiro approved.
Yes, because they are not wet-ass irises.
We had some wet-ass irises in the last episode.
Them wet-ass irises.
Make that rose game weak.
I think it's intentional that the flower festival is a thing because flowers have been known to be very yonic looking, and also just the whole... They literally have sex pistols, most flowers. Like, this is intentional, and just... I think it's... Also, you know, the whole metaphor of love blooming, I think it's a really great kind of metaphor, but it's also, it's kind of like on the nose symbolism with the flowers once again reoccurs.
I will say that this might or might not be intentional on the anime's part, but also flower festivals are kind of, not this one, which is obviously Valentine's Day, but flower festivals are like a traditional thing in like a lot of different cultures, and that is probably at least partially what they're about. Anyways, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Anyways, he sees the Capulet grave with the names chiseled off. So Francisco has taken Benvolio's family to a house where he's hiding them. When the mayor asks why he's helping them, he reveals his goal is to resurrect House Capulet. He said they'd gotten information about the assassination attempt. Mayor asks that if what Tybalt says was true, shouldn't the heir be a girl? Juliet looks at Francisco, and after he nods, she removes her magic wig, revealing her real flowing hair. I will never get over how she somehow manages to hide all of her hair under that wig without tying it or anything.
You know what? You know she's a princess because she's got magic hair. It's a Disney princess reference.
Yeah.
I don't think she's got magic hands, though.
I was just, the reason why I hesitated was because I was thinking through the logic of what being a princess means in this setting, because I guess she would technically have to already be ruling the city again to be a princess officially.
Can I release a fun Disney fact? You don't even have to technically be a princess to be part of the Disney princess line. A lot of their, like, other female characters or heroines are technically part of the Disney princess line. Like, a female character, young, and have to be part of a successful box office film.
Yeah. At Romeo's mom's place, she asks if he's bought any irises. He apologizes, and she chuckles and says that if he gives them to anyone, she would hope it would not be her, since it's the flower festival, which is the one day of the year where the castle courtyard is open to all, and you give your sweetheart flowers to reveal your undying love. Basically, a cheaper Valentine's Day. Romeo talks about the grave. He says he knows only one name so forbidden that it can't even be mentioned on a grave. He says he's been meeting a girl who visits said grave. He uses romantic language and says she has skin as pale as an iris petal. He asks the name of the Capulet daughter. His mother asks if she knows he's the Montague heir. He says she might. She asks if she can ask him to never think of her again. He says he can't and won't have her carry her burden herself. And she begins to tell Juliet's name as we cut to the Capulet house as Benvolio realizes she's Juliet. Benvolio describes Capulet as the oppressive tyrant whose cruelty to the people was legendary and greed insatiable. Francisco says that wasn't how it was, and the people have had their ability to talk about what has happened to them taken away. He says that Benvolio's father knows the true face of tyranny, and he confirms it's Montague. An older man with two gray streaks in his hair, who will be important later, tells Montague that the carriage went over the cliff and no bodies were recovered. The man seems somewhat afraid of Montague. We cut to a bustling market. Conrad and Francisco arrive at the safe house. The mayor is overjoyed to see Conrad is still alive. Francisco reveals that this is why he revealed Juliet to him and that he'd be a useful political exit. Curio says, "You're a cold, cruel man in your measures." And he shoots back, "The highest wartime compliment there is." He leaves saying that it's a flower festival, and he has some blossoms to attend to, and winks, presumably directly at Curio.
It's really good.
It's very good.
I want to see those two go, like, be gay and adopt Benvolio.
See, it kind of has, like, want a third energy. But the other one doesn't want a third.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. It's just like, hey, let's be a throuple. And the other one's like, no. I no. Shutting this down.
Look, we have a dumb son to raise. We have to teach him how to be direct about his feelings to Romeo.
I love how our opinion about Benvolio's intelligence basically completely changed based off of this episode alone.
Benvolio's smart in some ways, and they are not ways that a normal person would be smart. And it 100% has to do with class structure.
Yeah. So, as the bells ring, the gates open as flower petals come down. Conrad reveals that this is one of the few safe houses they still have, and no one will expect the Baldi family to be hiding here. He further reveals he will be separate. They will be separating from Benvolio, since they'll be looking for a family of three. Vittorio says maybe it's for the best, because it will give Benvolio a chance to be his own man. We cut to Benvolio being absolutely useless with a broom.
He has big male wife energy.
He will have more big male wife energy once he figures out how to use a broom.
He is just absolutely fascinated. This is like an alien artifact coming into his hands. He's like, what is the function? What is the purpose?
He holds it the wrong way up. I thought he was trying to sweep the top of the window when I first saw this.
Nope. He just doesn't know how to use a broom.
Cordelia gets mad and asks what he's doing, and he says he's never held a broom before, and it's a novel experience. She tells him to get out of the way, and as he continues to marvel, she tells him to get some boxes downstairs instead. He tries to lift all the boxes, and she tells him to lift only what he can carry. He picks up a basket and leaves with a big smile because it's very apparent that he likes being bossed around by Cordelia. So, okay, everybody still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm there. I just didn't want to interrupt weirdly.
You should be interrupting because that is part of the function of how this podcast works.
I know. I was just trying to find the good timing. I was like, is this a good time?
Anytime's a good time with the power of audacity.
We don't even use audacity.
Yes, I do. That's how I do our editing.
Oh, okay.
Like audacity. I don't care if you do war crimes. I like money.
Nice.
You know what? I said that, and that's probably something Ben Shapiro has fucking said in real life with full sincerity.
Yeah, he has actually. He wrote an article about how. He doesn't care about civilian casualties.
Ben Shapiro's going to become a civilian casualty courtesy of Coley. Coley, come here.
I'm going to fucking kick Ben Shapiro's ass one day.
So, Ben Shapiro, or listen to our little anime podcast. Pick the time, pick the place.
Just to be clear, Ben Shapiro, we're not offering to debate you. We're offering to fight you physically.
I'll also debate you, and it'll still be a takedown.
I have a feeling Ben Shapiro's exposure to anime is just only anime avatar, anime girl avatars with MAGA hats photoshopped on. I feel like if his exposure was to anything more than that, I feel like he would react to anime the way I think H.P. Lovecraft would react to anime, and that is abject horror.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I feel like Ben Shapiro reacts to a lot of things the same way H.P. Lovecraft would react to a lot of things. Yeah. In a different era, I could see Ben Shapiro having a similarly named cat, for example.
Can I just say something? I used to think Mark Zuckerberg was H.P. Lovecraft's reincarnation. But is it actually Ben Shapiro?
It might be.
No. H.P. Lovecraft was a much better writer.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Brett Hawthorne.
Take a bullet for you, babe.
Apparently, H.P. Lovecraft was good at sex, according to his ex-wife, Sonia Green, so I think that's another less likelihood for Ben Shapiro being H.P. Lovecraft's reincarnation.
Yeah, for sure.
Babe, it's okay that my vagina's constantly dry. It's okay.
He's never seen a wet-ass iris.
The whole, like, that just means you have an affection. I'm like, that's a different kind of discharge, my friend. Given the context of the song, they're not talking about having a fucking infection, you pedantic weevil.
I mean, being pedantic in this scenario, I don't even know if I would count it as pedantic, because most pedantic people are annoying, but at least, like, partially correct. Like, he asked his doctor wife, and she said, oh no, it's supposed to be dry.
Like, discharge, like, that kind of discharge just happens. It doesn't even have to be for arousal. It's just your body just makes it. It's just, some people have medical conditions if they cannot create the fluids that they need to, and they have lube and prescriptions for it. And if it's an excess, the discharge wouldn't be what the kind that WAP is referring to.
Really looking forward to my parents listening to this episode.
God. I'm looking forward to your parents listening to this episode.
This is the genealogical facts of Liz Corner.
So we got two.
Did Liz ruin this podcast? This podcast ruined.
No, no, this is great.
I encouraged you is the thing.
Take a moment. Take a moment, Zeb.
We cut to Cordelia complaining to Juliet about how useless Benvolio is. When Juliet doesn't respond, she asks if she's all right, and she says it's nothing, but asks Cordelia to check up on them when she can. Cordelia says she was already planning to since she's the mom friend. Conrad asks Francisco and Kirio if they're sure the name they were given was Tybalt. They say yes, and then Francisco asks the obvious question of whether Conrad knows Tybalt. Conrad very unconvincingly says no, and then turns around and thinks it cannot be, and it's really funny.
It is really funny, especially since it's very obvious he's saying no, and they just take him at his word.
It's also funny because they say, oh, it's a guy named Tybalt, and he says, Tybalt, you're absolutely sure that the man's name was Tybalt? And they say, yeah, do you know a Tybalt? And he's like, no? And they're like, oh, okay.
It's amazing.
So, Amelia is quitting. William asks why, and she tells him it doesn't matter. He says it does, and she should weave him a story of a woman gone mad. And she says, I'd tell you to write it yourself if I didn't know you were a third-rate hack. His response is, you bloody actress! She reveals that her boyfriend invites three other girls to the festival and drags Juliet off as her date. Also, Juliet was carrying like this thing to keep stuff in, and Amelia takes it from her and just puts it on William's head as they leave.
It's really funny.
Romeo is looking over the city when Lady Hermione comes to ask him to view the fireworks on the terrace that his father is using to honor their engagement. She asks if he has other plans, and when he says no, she says he'll be waiting for him. She asks if it's safe to assume that roses are his favorite flower, proving that maybe Prince Montague was right to try to put these two together because they are both very dumb. So we come to the parade, where there's a parade float made up of flowers and a bunch of flower art. Amelia says the whole thing is beautiful. It would be even better if the soldiers did spoil the view. She then just sticks her tongue out at two soldiers as Juliet tries in vain to calm her down. Anyways, Juliet is very briefly distracted by a guy who looks a bit like Romeo from the back. And by the time she's turned around, Amelia is already leaving with another guy. She has absolutely zero chill.
At this point, those soldiers, they're basically just people doing their jobs at this point.
The soldiers were involved in, like, enforcing, like, the curfew and the food shortages and stuff in the previous episodes.
You know, that's fair. That is fair.
I want to say something about episode 7. I like Romeo's mom. I'm just a little disappointed she's not here more. And then we don't get a flashback to her romance between her and Romeo's father, because I think there's a genuine affection for her, or a one-sided love for her.
Yeah.
I think they missed an opportunity with that, but I think it's overall a very romantic episode. I think it kind of brings that rush of first love, the grandeur. And I do like the flower festival. I'm like, I love, this is such a setup. I love it. This is just such tropey bullshit. Give it to me.
Yeah. So Romeo wanders the parade and comes to some irises at a flower shop. Juliet on the bridge accidentally drops her iris. It lands on his shoulder. He sees her and she runs, and he runs off after her into the night. An English version of You Raise Me Up starts playing.
Yes, and this made me go incredibly hype.
Oh, right. I forgot the fact that you get hype from You Raise Me Up.
I don't really like the song, but contextually, it is a very hype moment.
So, he finds her on the bridge. He embraces her and kisses her. Fireworks go off, and we cut to poor Lady Hermione alone. Juliet and Romeo stare at each other. He hands her the flowers she dropped. She smiles. The episode preview is a sword unsheathed, the final act composed. Dark Corrin awaits for our players to collect. The lies a conscience cannot bear, exposed. One trampled by pale hooves, no truth reflect. So, I think we should probably talk about this episode as a separate thing.
Yeah, a lot of the episodes, when we do them like this, a lot of them do fit together really well. This one does not.
Yeah,
there's like a whole different like attitude.
Yeah. So, I like this episode. It's very romantic. It's very funny. We establish some ships that will be important later in the show.
This was a really good episode. The first kiss is a real big hype moment.
The fireworks, the bridge on the aqueducts of Neo Verona. Ah, it's enchanting. It's exciting. It's kind of cliche, like a lot of romances do that, over the top, whatever. But I think because Romeo x Juliet is so genuinely sincere when these moments happen, that they are no longer cliche.
There's that meme that was going around on Twitter, and it was like, oh yeah, I hate cliches. And then the two people go into the room and there's only one bed, and I'm like, oh my god, they're in the room and there's only one bed. That's kind of how I feel about this episode.
Same. It's like, I don't, give me it. Spoon feed me this.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I do have to say, this whole anime, the way they use music is wonderful.
It is great.
That use of the English version of You Raise Me Up in that spot was really good, and I can understand why Coley gets hyped for it.
Yeah.
If we set up a Patreon, I'll totally put, like, I'll do karaoke of You Raise Me Up and put it on Patreon. That's fine.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I also like how they started, because this time around I paid more attention to the music. They didn't start with the first verse. They started with the verse that they added for this anime that is not in the original song, but is really good. And that's the verse that goes, there is no life, no life without its hunger. Should I just sing it or should I state it?
I think you should state it, because we don't want to give away the material that we're going to be charging money for later. That's it. It's the same reason why I don't eat on podcast.
Damn it. Oh my gosh. Damn. Okay.
Is Deb gonna do some ASMR shit?
That was the joke, yes.
You know what? Now we have to have that as a fucking tier. Now that you said it, that's gonna be like, what? The $2 to listen to Zeb eat food on the podcast.
$2 each. You get a recording of Zeb eating a sandwich.
And it's not even like video, it's just audio.
So, back to what I was saying. The verse that I'm talking about is the one that's like, there is no life, no life without its hunger. Each restless heart beats so imperfectly. But when you come and I am filled with wonder, sometimes I think I glimpse eternity. And that's really good. It also goes straight into the awesome guitar solo they added. That's a lot of the hype.
Yeah. Yeah, the show has always used music really well, and they did it with You Raise Me Up as well. So for no other thoughts, I'm going to jump into the next episode.
Actually, let's take a short little break and come back before we hit the next episode. And we are back.
Romeo x Juliet episode 8 is called Naivety, What Justice Is. After the kiss, he tells her he loves her. She tells him their love can never be. He asks if it's because she's the Capulet heir and he's the Montagues. It would be extremely funny if the rest of this anime hadn't happened and she was just some random girl.
It would be.
Anyway, he tells her he doesn't care about their family names, and she gives him the handkerchief. She says that it's an apology gift for burning his shirt. She tells him, "You are a true gentleman, and I just want to tell you, farewell," and then runs away. The next day, we see the priest. He is in front of a very cool, like, kind of dragon steed Pegasus statue with a staff and shield, giving alms to the poor. A guard, who is not Saruman, but I think has the same voice, tells Tybalt that the priest is nothing but a hypocrite who informs for them. Tybalt pays him a bribe.
There's a really cool thing he says when he gives that bribe. He says, "The low wages of the Carbonari cannot buy you many pleasures," and then bribes the man.
Yeah, it's very cool. We see Juliet sparring with Antonio aggressively. When she tries to sheathe the sword, she drops it, and Cordelia tells her it's reckless to spar until her hands bleed. She asks if it's because of the noble boy, and Juliet says no and leaves. When Antonio asks what's going on, she tells him it's no concern earned to boys. When he asks if there isn't something she can do, she tells him, "Sometimes all friends can do is silently watch over friends." Curio tries to avoid having Benvolio stay with him. Francisco tells him he should be happy to have a twink. When Curio asks why Francisco doesn't take him, he claims only girls are allowed in his home in a way that's definitely convincing and not overcompensation. Not at all. He's just in a very heterosexual way teasing his male friend about the possibility of that male friend being gay, and also talking about how he doesn't let other men in his home, and he's definitely straight.
That's totally cis-heteronormal behavior, bro. Like, I don't know what you do with your friends, but, like... These two are, like, a secret yaoi couple. I'm 90% certain that anime invented these two just to get yaoi fangirls to like it, and you know what? They did a good job.
Yeah.
10 out of 10 stars. Best fave side couple.
Benvolio promises to cook and wash clothes. When Curio asks him if he knows how, he says no, but he can learn. Curio is cranky and says he won't be his mentor. Benvolio promises to be useful and then trips over a table and falls on the floor. Outside, Francisco says he wants friendly relations between the two since he's politically useful. When Curio asks if the boy is nothing but a bargaining chip, Francisco says that they should hope it doesn't come to that, and we see Cordelia listening in. So, cut to child abuse. Prince Montague calls Romeo a miserable cur after very clearly having smacked him in the face and asks where he was. Romeo claims he was on Cielo, and Montague orders Cielo be destroyed. Hermione comes in and asks for the favor of being allowed to ride the steed. Montague grants her indulgence, but as they leave, he tells Romeo not to disappoint him again. So Romeo apologizes for standing Hermione up, and she plays it off like he was meeting Benvolio. Romeo shows her the handkerchief and starts to confess, but she reveals that she already knows, and you can't choose who you love because she's too pure for this world. She then runs off in tears.
My poor dear. Also, I just want to say this. This has like startling, almost uncomfortable parallels to like stories or like dramas where two characters find out they're like half siblings or something.
Which part do you mean specifically?
Like just the shocking reveal, like, oh my, that's who you are? Oh my god!
But it's not the same.
It's not. I think I've just been watching too much soap operas lately.
Right.
Also, I do not like the twist of secret incest, like incest that nobody, I'm like, this is some VC Andrews shit. I do not like, put it in the trash.
Yeah.
But that's not this anime.
It's not. My brain's melted. It's guys, listeners, yeah. My dearest. It is so hot. Liz has just soup for brains right now.
So, as Romeo walks down the hall, Mercutio appears and offers to give him counsel for anything that troubles him. Romeo thanks him, but says he'd rather be on his own and walks off. Well, Mercutio just maintains the same pose. It's very funny. Romeo finds a letter from Benvolio. Benvolio mentions that Romeo must be surprised to hear from him because he's supposed to be dead. Romeo has no idea what the fuck he's talking about. Juliet asks Conrad to see her father's sword. She swears to carry it from now on, as is their tradition. She swears that House Capulet will rise again. Conrad is so happy he looks like he'll cry. So Benvolio and Romeo meet outside. When Benvolio is shocked that Romeo knows nothing and tries to hide what's going on, Romeo insists they should have no secrets. Benvolio makes him promise not to overreact, and I'm not sure there is an overreaction to your dad tried to have my entire family killed.
Right? Also, your dad is an unabashed monster.
Yeah. Benvolio tells him a lot, but doesn't reveal any of his benefactor's names. He says that Romeo's day to lead is coming. Romeo tells him to call if needs anything. Benvolio says he can take care of himself, which is a clear lie. He says that Curio is stern and intimidating, but has a pure heart. So Juliet looks at the spot where Lancelot sacrificed himself. She swears to be the wind of hope.
I'll be the wind of hope. The hope that will carry your ashes. Because you burned yourself alive.
Tybalt appears and says that she won't be exacting vigilante justice anymore. She asks who he is, and he says, are you certain you want to tell you? My young flower, who knows nothing. Like a weird creep. He asks if she's afraid to follow him, and she tells him she's not afraid of anything, because she is very easy to manipulate.
I'm surprised Juliet hasn't developed like a severe phobia of fire because of the whole Lancelot thing.
Right?
I feel like most anime would have given her, like, now she is traumatized by fire. Fire phobia activated.
The thing is, to a certain degree, think that maybe Juliet is telling the truth when she says she's not afraid of anything and it's a problem.
She constantly is just like rushing into everything and it's just like, no, please. You're the one that has the brain cells of your relationship.
She's just like, I'm not afraid of anything. And all of the people who have to raise her are like, yeah, we know it's a major problem. We wish that you would be.
Just a little bit. A little afraid of a couple of things.
So Romeo reflects that he doesn't belong in the castle and decides to ride around the city. Outside of Lancelot's house, Tybalt reflects on how he disappeared the same day that the Red Whirlwind died. When she asks how he knows, he reveals he has eyes everywhere and passes coins to a man on the street while the man hands him a note. He reveals the whole area is full of spies. When she asks how long he's been spying, he just tells her to get on his dragon steed. Antonio worries about Odin. William tells him he'll require time on his own at that age too. When asked what he means, William says a child would never understand, and Antonio, who I will remind everyone, is a small boy, kicks William's ass.
But considering some things we see from Antonio later, I feel like Antonio could kick most grown men's asses.
That is fair.
Antonio's a small child, but he has the strength of 10 men. He's not small, he's just 10 men.
He's got skill.
He picked dexterity over strength.
We go to a bar where people are throwing knives at a picture of Prince Montague. Tybalt gives Juliet a knife and asks if she hates Prince Montague. She gets a good shot and says it doesn't matter if she hates him. Tybalt throws 3 knives at once, which all hit. He tells her, "My loathing is sharp to a very fine edge, my lady." Benvolio wonders if he did the best thing talking to Romeo. Curio arrives and tells him to get some sleep. He throws him a blanket and tells him to take it since he'll need it. It looks like it's the only blanket on his bed. We've spoken a little bit about about relationships we wished were a little bit more developed. This is one of them. I wish that we had more Curio and Benvolio in this show.
Yeah.
I'm not to spoil future episodes, but like his character gets dropped in a way that seems a little odd given how it seemed like he's going to be more integrated with the main group.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know, it feels like they were setting up some interesting stuff here. Romeo soars the skies. Tybalt takes Juliet to test her resolve and see if she's worthy of her father's sword. He shows her the priest talking to the captain. He tells her the priest is an informant, and we see coins going down while the priest grins with open greed. Tybalt asks how she'll deal with him. The priest laughs evilly at his buddy.
If she came like a half hour earlier, she would have found him rolling on the floor in it, just like a cat rolling in catnip, like...
She approaches and repeats, "Unforgivable. Playing savior to the peasants while you sell them out to the Carbonari. Traitor, you disgust me." He smirks and reflects that the doctor said the same thing, and that young people who know nothing are troublesome. When she pulls out a sword, he begs for mercy, saying they'd have killed him if he didn't do what they said, even though he was smugly gloating, like, just... less than a minute ago. Juliet can't bring herself to kill him and tries to banish him. He pulls out a knife, but pauses as he sees her crest and thinks of his good fortune just in time for Tybalt to kill him. She cries outside while Tybalt says, "If that's your idea of punishment, you'll never be able to bring down Montague." But as she says she can't bring herself to kill, he hugs her. Romeo sees them. The episode preview is, "Our comely hero cries, the time is nigh, but valor shall be the midwife of despair. Brave fortune finds no comfort in night skies. With purpose, you declare." So I like this episode.
Yes, I do as well.
It's really good.
The show gets better as it goes on and on, and it is very good on the building upon it, you know?
Yeah, I really think that Tybalt is a really good addition to the cast. Elizabeth talked about this the first time that we recorded this, and I'll say it here. I think that it's cool that he like adds a little bit of moral ambiguity to the main cast, though it's true that there are certain other characters who already add a little bit of that, like Francisco, who we see here, like, doesn't necessarily want to be completely ruthless and manipulative, but is willing to be.
One thing that shows up very good is building and maintaining momentum, but not in a way where, you know, like, watching the show just gets tiring, you know, because so much is going on. Like, there's still room for things to breathe, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it is incredibly well-paced.
Overall, it's a strong episode, and I think it also kind of plays into what you need to do in order to get a rebellion going. And unfortunately, if you're trying to fight people with horrible power disparities and are willing to abuse you, you are stuck in situations where you're like, there's no way for me to be the good guy in this if I want to survive or to prosper.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we're at the spot where normally we'd do predictions.
We've had to record this when we're at episode 20 of the anime, I believe.
Something like that. Predictions would be absurd at this moment.
Yeah.
I will give out a fake prediction that's not going to come true, and that is Tybalt kills Han Solo, who was really Rosebud.
What? That's not even...
Hey, I said it would be a fake prediction.
I predict that Cecil's going to continue to be a bastard for some time, but, you know, no one knows who Cecil is. He's my cat. Well, Kenzie's cat.
I predict that Tybalt is going to be the hottest character on this anime.
I predict that Lord Montague is Mephisto.
Right, that is it for this episode. This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime is not. I'm Zeb Berryman. This has been Anime's Journey to the West. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Anime's Journey TW, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Music is Tavern Loop 1 by Alexander Nakarada at SerpentSoundStudios.com. Licensed under Creative Commons 4.0. This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime is not.